Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Amy, and I am an alcoholic.
Hey, Amy.
For those of you who wish to join us, let's open the meeting with the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively. They are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA simple actions. This is the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we are discussing step 12. Please welcome our panel. We have Heidi and Patrick. I will read the first paragraph on page 89. I will read the first paragraph on page 89, and then the panel will share for a few minutes each on the reading. Step 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Page 89. Practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. It works when other activities fail. This is our 12th suggestion. Carry this message to other alcoholics. You can help when no one else can. You can secure their confidence when others fail. Remember, they are very ill. Life will take on new meaning. To watch people recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see a fellowship grow up about you, to have a host of friends, this is an experience you must not miss. We know you will not want to miss it. Frequent contact with newcomers and with each other is the bright spot of our lives.
Okay. Patrick Lanier, alcoholic.
Hey, Patrick.
Intensive work. That's crazy because I just left the gym. Like, I left the gym at 6:30 because I still like to be retarded when I do things, but I left there and I'm here, and it was an intensive workout. And that's the thing, you know, with intensive work, what are they trying to say to me here? Like, I don't know, you know, wait a little bit or tell my sponsee to go read a couple chapters and call me every day? Or is it like we meet up every week and we read a couple times a week? And I mean, that's the way I see it. You know, it says carry this message to other alcoholics, and it has an explanation point on that. Carry this message. What message is that? My message? The message from other literature? No, it's telling me to carry this message. And I try to do that in every meeting I go to, is I talk about this book and only. I can help when no one else can. And how is, and that is so true. That is so true. You know, I there was a lot of people that wanted to help me, a lot of people, and I loved them dearly, but they just couldn't, they couldn't give me a message. You know, their message was, come on, man, don't drink. Don't drink. Just don't drink. And it's crazy because sometimes I go to AA and that's the message that's carried. Just don't drink no matter what. Go to a lot of meetings. But then when someone actually carried this message to me about, you know, the big book, the 12 steps about being doomed from alcoholism, all of a sudden I was like, they secured my confidence. And it didn't take long. It was probably in the matter of, I don't know, 15 minutes. And I knew that this guy knew what he was talking about when it came to alcoholism. And that's always something I try to relay to new people. You know, I don't try to tell them, like, oh, if you drink, you're going to die. Because, like, where's the depth and weight in that bullshit? And honestly, to be truthful, man, at the end of my drinking, like, death is a sweet, sweet victory right there. I wish I could have it. Like, you ain't going to scare me with death. But when someone started talking to me about what it's like when I'm sober, that was the message that hit home with me. It really did. I remember clear as day when someone was on the phone with me. I don't even know why I called them. And we started talking, and, you know, first he told me that I had to drink. And I'm like, what? I ain't never heard that before. That's crazy, because like I said, people in AA are telling me just don't drink. Probation officers telling me not to drink. My parents are telling me not to drink. My daughter's mother's telling me not to drink. And then I call this guy, and he tells me I have to drink. And that definitely piqued my interest. And then, he came right after it with what his experience was in life when he was sober. And when he started talking about, you know, nothing ever going right for him, no matter what he strived for, there was always something better. When he started talking about whenever he's someplace, he needs to be someplace else, that one really hit home. And when he started talking about these things, it was so strange. I was like, I don't know. He was putting words to things that I had an idea that they were going on, but I never really could put it together. When he was talking about never fitting in, he could be surrounded by his friends, and he still felt like a little bit of an outsider. And then he hit me with this one line. He said, the second I take a drink, the world becomes an easier, softer place. And God, man, when he said that, I was like, this cat knows what he's talking about. There's been plenty of times I'll go and I'll sit at the bar and I'll watch the bartender like pouring a shot of Jameson or Old Crow, and she'll be cracking open a Coors Light, and I know they're coming, and they aren't, I don't even have them yet, but I can see her doing it, and the weight just starts to come off my shoulders. I'm just like, oh, I'm about ready to get relief. So when he started talking about those things, man, that piqued my interest. It did. And then he told me, you know, I'm like, because I asked him, like, what am I supposed to do? He said, you're doomed. He said, you're going to probably drink forever. And I was like, is there anything? And he said, you know, he asked me what the definition of insanity was. And I mean, I say it all the time because I love it. It was a great one-liner, great little zing. And of course, me saying, doing the same thing over again, expecting different results. And he said, that's great. He said, how about this one? Come into a 12-step program and not taking the 12 steps. Yeah. And he had me there. He had me there, but it wasn't my fault. AA has changed a lot. Like, AA has changed a lot over the years. But back when I came here, man, there was a lot of people talking about doing a lot of other things. I mean, we were talking about, like, The Secret, The Celestine Prophecy. We had all kinds of things going on. And the steps, they would mention them once in a while. But this guy, he told me, like, if I had any shot whatsoever, then I was going to have to take these two steps rapidly. So I started doing it. And, you know, it talks here about, you know, loneliness vanishing. I mean, yeah, it did. I don't like to think that I was a lonely guy because I was always drinking in bars. But like I told you, I never fit in, man. Anywhere I go, I ain't even fit in prison, dude. What the fuck? I ain't fit in anywhere. But once I started taking these steps, all of a sudden, you know, I have my fellows. I see them. I see some of them sitting here tonight, dude. And like I fit in with those people. It's crazy. Then it talks about frequent contact with newcomers and with each other is the bright spot of our lives. Wow. I came in here helpless and hopeless, and today I got God in my life and a purpose, and I can help people when others can't. People that go to 4, 6, 8, 10 years of college, I can do stuff they can't. Because there's one line in this book that will always be my famous favorite line. I always say it. We know how he feels. That's the greatest line in the big book, because that's been true for me. I try to relay that on to people when I talk to them. Like, I understand, man. I understand. Thanks for letting me share.
Thanks for sharing. My name's Heidi. I'm an alcoholic. Hi. So my sobriety date is August 12, 1987. And you know what these two paragraphs meant to me then, because I was taught that that's what they meant, but even mean to me now, is that working with other alcoholics is what gets me out of myself. And that was the root of my disease. My self-centered fear was the root of my disease. And so when I distract myself from self, then there is room for me to grow. And then, you know, it also talks here about, remember, they are very ill. Well, if I'm working with another alcoholic and I'm an alcoholic, that means that I'm very ill too. And that is a reminder for me that I really need to look at every day. I came in thinking that I was better than everybody else, but my self-esteem was in the gutter. The great dichotomy of the alcoholic mind, I guess. And so the next paragraph that talks about life will take on new meaning, to watch other people recover, to see other people help other people, that to me speaks to community. And that is what's so important to me, because left to my own devices, I want to stay by myself. I want to isolate, I want to drink, I want to drug, I want to do everything that I do by myself and not have to interact with other people. And so this second paragraph talks about to watch others succeed, to get out of myself. And that's what I get out of this so far, this part of the chapter. Thanks for letting me share.
All right, we're picking up the reading now on page 91. See your man alone if possible. At first, engage in general conversation. After a while, turn the talk to some phase of drinking. Tell him enough about your drinking habits, symptoms, and experiences to encourage him to speak of himself. If he wishes to talk, let him do so. You will thus get a better idea of how you ought to proceed. If he is not communicative, give him a sketch of your drinking career up to the time you quit. But say nothing for the moment of how that was accomplished. If he is in a serious mood, dwell on the troubles liquor has caused you, being careful not to moralize or lecture. If his mood is light, tell him humorous stories of your escapades. Get him to tell some of his.
See your man alone, huh? That's sometimes difficult nowadays, seeing that I usually meet people at Birdneck or the psych center or in meetings. And but the thing is, you know, at first engage in general conversation. I don't know. He probably, those places meeting people, you probably already know I'm an alcoholic, so we already got that. But if he's not communicative, give him a sketch of your drinking career. Gee, this is a tough paragraph to talk about. Careful not to moralize or lecture. Like right there, I was reading over here, you know, it talked about like not being an evangelist or a reformer. For some reason that stuck out to me, and like, what are they talking about there? Like, don't be talking crap about alcohol, and don't be like trying to like smash someone over the head with Jesus. That's what I get out of that. let them come to that on their own. But for me, like, I don't know, I love alcohol. I still do to this day. I know that it screwed me up. Other people can drink, they can. And I have no problem with that. I don't want them to go and like ban alcohol and start prohibition again. Like, it was me. And like it was said, like, my self-centeredness is what got me like that. Maybe if I wasn't such a selfish prick, maybe I wouldn't have ever crossed that line. I might have only been able to have a few drinks. I'll never know. But the one thing, you know, with this is like, I don't know, I've worked with a lot of guys, and it's always different going into it. I don't know. Sometimes you get to meet the family. Sometimes you got the mom on the couch crying, and it's really hard to explain that, like, your kid's just selfish, man. You just got to get out of self. And they're like, what? What are you talking about? There's a lot of things that I say. I'm like, oh, man, it's hard to construe it to loved ones. And then, I mean, for me, it wasn't so bad, but like, we're able to do things in people's lives that their loved ones weren't able to do. And that can be sort of hard for the other people. Like, I don't know, my parents couldn't get me sober. They loved me to death. They loved me so much. But, you know, and then some kid comes from Louisiana that's like, I don't know, 20 years old, and he can finally do the magic. But I don't know, with this, the whole moralize and lecture thing, that just keeps sticking out to me. I don't moralize and lecture now. I hear it all the time. I hear it all the time in meetings, you know. People are like, oh, I gotta run that by my sponsor. Oh, like, I don't know if I should be dating that person. I don't know if I should be doing that. And I'm like, I make it very clear in the beginning. Like, dude, I don't know what you should do with your life. I don't know. I'm not going to tell you to stay out of relationships. I'm not going to tell you where to work. I'm not going to do any of that bullshit. What I'm going to do is I'm going to read this book with you. If you want to read this book, I'll read it with you. I know about this book. But I leave it at that. It's okay to not know everything. That's crazy for me to say, because I like to believe I know everything. But when it comes to this, it's so touchy. Like, we have people's lives in our hands. And we're like, oh, you're a stripper and you need to change your job. Like, who the hell are you? How do you know what they should do? How about you just stick to what you know? You know that? Because let's get truthful here. We're all drunks, dude. This is a room full of drunks. I don't care if you have 30 years. I don't care if you have 15 years. You're still a drunk. And, like, any day, you're going to fall short on your certain ideals that you've made. And I always got to remember that, you know, it's not about like all that with that. It's about helping someone find a God in their life or a power so that power can solve their drink issue. Not me. I just read the freaking book. Thanks for letting me share.
Thanks for sharing. So when I was looking over this paragraph today, preparing to come here tonight, I was thinking about this guy that just happened to get in touch with me again recently. It's a guy who's done yard work for my mother and myself over the years, and at one time he stopped coming around to do the yard work, and his mother called and said, well, you know, Jeremy's not going to be coming because he's in jail. And I found out later that this guy is an alcoholic and a drug addict. And make a long story short, my property was flooded, and my mother's property was flooded a couple years ago. And this guy was there the next day after the flood and started ripping out carpet and doing all the really hard work for us. And he stuck with us until we got our houses back together, and he's continued to do yard work. So during the time when he was helping us recover from the flood, I had opportunity to spend a lot of time with him in the car, going here and there and everywhere. And I shared with him, finally, that I was an alcoholic and a drug addict, and that I had been in program for a while. And, you know, I just shared with him my story, like it says here. And what I have come to learn with Jeremy is that he wants to listen on his terms, and he wants me to listen to him. And so I was able to do that for a little while. He never stopped using. And last weekend he came over, he called me, and he was telling me that he was working out of town, and he started crying. I said, what in the world is wrong with you? And he said, I've been clean for 3 weeks and sober for 3 weeks, and I don't know what to do with myself. So back in the days when I was recovering from the flood, I shared with him that I had been in 12-step program, and he was working alongside my son, who is in program, and two other people who were helping me who are in program, and we all just kind of, mentioned it. We weren't hitting him over the head with a big book or anything. And so when he called me, he said that he had been clean for 3 weeks, and he didn't know what to do with it himself. And I said, dude, go to a meeting. Put yourself in the presence of recovering people. Well, that's not what he's choosing to do. And he came by yesterday, just to give me a hug and tell me that he made it one more week. And he still hasn't gone to a meeting. And, when I talk to him, I just want to shake him and say, dude, go to a meeting. Go find some recovering people. But I didn't. And so it's a long way to say, this paragraph to me means that I need to learn how to listen to people. I don't have all the answers. And I sure as heck didn't want people preaching to me when I was still using. If they had, when I came into these rooms, I would have run screaming. So I was standing out on the porch talking with him yesterday, and in the back of my head I'm thinking, God, just tell him to go to a meeting, read. I gave him a book, read the book. but I didn't. My higher power was telling me, no, Heidi, just listen. Just listen to this guy. And so he gave me a hug when he came. He gave me a hug when he left. And he said, I may be calling you. I may need to be calling you. So I hold out hope for Jeremy. I hope he'll make it into the rooms. But it's not, I feel like it's not my place to hit him over the head with the big book. I need to... it's attraction rather than promotion, and I need to live the principles of this program. And he's seen me over the years do that, and he's seen my son over the years. And, I believe that that's as strong a message as pushing the big book and pushing program. I think first they have to see that somebody has to see that I walk the walk and don't just talk the talk. So that's what that reminded me of. Thanks for letting me share.
Thanks for sharing.
We're continuing on page 91. What is the last thing I read? Oh, getting to tell some of
this. Yeah, okay.
It is 91. When he sees you know all about the drinking game, commence to describe yourself as an alcoholic. Tell him how baffled you were, how you finally learned that you were sick. Give him an account of the struggles you made to stop. Show him the mental twist which leads to the first drink of a spree. We suggest you do this as we have done it in the chapter on alcoholism. If he is alcoholic, he will understand you at once. He will match your mental inconsistencies with some of his own. If you are satisfied that he is a real alcoholic, begin to dwell on the hopeless feature of the malady. Show him, from your own experience, how the queer mental condition surrounding that first drink prevents normal functioning of the willpower. Don't, at this stage, refer to this book unless he has seen it and wishes to discuss it. And be careful not to brand him as an alcoholic. Let him draw his own conclusion. If he sticks to the idea that he can still control his drinking, tell him that possibly he can, if he is not too alcoholic. But insist that if he is severely afflicted, there may be little chance he can recover by himself.
Cool. All right, all right. If you are satisfied that he is a real alcoholic and then tells me not to brand, I don't know. I go to a lot of meetings, and I hear people all the time saying, oh, if you're in AA, you must be an alcoholic. If you came here, you're probably an alcoholic. And yo, that ain't even true. That's not true at all. Because I love to talk about the hard drinker, and everyone's like, oh, here he goes again. But it's not true, dude. I remember my sponsor. I remember years ago, I was sitting in a meeting with him, and he like went off on a tangent, and like he started screaming about how hard drinkers were bogging down his AA. And I couldn't stop laughing. I thought it was hilarious. No one else in the room thought it was funny, but I was like, dude, that is magic right there. I wish I said that. And other people, I mean, a lot of people are like, oh, here he goes. But yo, it talks about a hard drinker in our book. In our book, it says that you might have this illness so bad that it kills you. You might end up going to detox. You might end up, you know, losing a lot of stuff. You might get a DUI. But if something happens, you know, love, good job, great workout plan, bunch of meetings, and all of a sudden, you know, I hear it all the time. Like, I've been sitting in AA going to meetings and nothing in life is great. And I'm like, huh? Ain't done a step of nothing, and life is wonderful. It's magical. Just sitting here among you wonderful people, and my life is great. And I'm like, huh. I mean, I'll tell you a story. There was a kid that he was in the Coast Guard, and he asked me for my help. And I was like, yeah, sure. It'd be a privilege. And so me and him, you know, we're calling. We go to a meeting, and then we set up a time to meet at Barnes & Noble so we could start going through this book. And something just hit me on my way there. I'm like, man, I should identify. I should, you know, what it talks about here, if I'm satisfied that he is a real alcoholic. I said, you know, I should see. So I started asking this kid questions. And he started telling me about his family life. And he told me about his wife. And he said to me, he said this, he said, you know, my wife just started a cooking class, so I went out and put a brand new oven in the house. And I'm like, huh, what? I'm like, you put a new oven in the house? And he's like, yeah. I'm like, why'd you do that? And he's like, I'm looking at him like he's crazy. And he's like, because I wanted her to do good in her cooking class. And I'm like, what? Like, you didn't have anything else, like maybe she'd sleep with you more that week, or there wasn't any other ideas going through your head other than you want her to do wonderful in her cooking class. And he's like, yeah, and he's looking at me like I'm crazy. And I'm like, huh, okay. I said, you know, maybe we don't need to go through the steps right now. Maybe we should just pull the brakes on this one, go a little slower, maybe go to some meetings. He said, I was thinking the same thing too. And, you know, I read with him about the description of the alcoholic. And I started talking about Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde, about tearing down the structure on my head. And I read to him about the hard drinker, and he said, you know, I think I might fit in there. I said, look, dude, let's just go. We're going to go at this slow. We can go some meetings if you want. And you got my number, too. If there's ever a time when you're like, nah, I'm that guy, then give me a call and we'll go through these steps. But why do I need to force people through the steps? Why? That aren't alcoholics. Come on now. But we do it. You come here, you're an alcoholic. You walk through that door, and that's not what the book says. It doesn't. Identification is very, very important. Because what happens is it does. Like my sponsor said years ago, it bogs down our message. Or when our message is like, dude, we can't stop drinking. We have this illness that we're doomed. We are powerless over alcohol. That means no matter what, I'm going to get drunk. Good, bad, or indifferent, I'm going to get drunk. I'm always going to get drunk. You know, and then you have the person that comes in and is like, that's not me, man. I just got into this wonderful community and everything's been perfect ever since. Messes it up. Sounds crazy, don't it? I know. Does to a real alcoholic. So if you're questioning me, read the book. But, you know, it says, at this stage, refer to this book. Unless you see it, don't refer to it. Like I said, I don't know. I don't meet people. Where I meet people, we're already in it. Every time I meet someone, we're already in it. And the best place that I can have the most lively conversation is when I'm reading this book. It does a better job than me. Imagine that. It brings up points that I will forget. It talks about things that I won't remember, and it brings up lively conversations where we can match experiences, and like it says, we can match inconsistencies. Thank you.
Thanks for sharing. Well, I don't have much to add to this. You know, what this means to me is that I don't really have anything to offer except my own experience, strength, and hope. And I can talk until I'm blue in the face, and if you don't relate to what I have to say to you, then I'm not going to be able to do you any good. But, you know, be careful not to brand him as an alcoholic. And so what that is telling me is, again, I need to keep it in, well, this is what happened to me, and I think, you know, this is what worked for me, and keep it in I messages and not, you know, you really need to go to a meeting, like I wanted to say to Jeremy. You know, I found my way into the rooms trying to tell everybody in my family what they needed to do to get better and what they needed to do to make their lives improve. And, you know, it's like the teacher in the Charlie Brown comic, wah, 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 wah. And that's, you know, that's what happens. People, I did it to people who tried to tell me, you know, people who tried to help me with my drinking and my drugging. It was just, until I was ready, I wasn't ready. And, you know, as much as I would like to share this way of life with everybody, until they're ready, they're not ready. And that is, that's my message, you know, share my experience, strength, and hope, and don't give advice. Just be here and be willing to take people through this book when they're ready to go through it. Thanks for letting me share.
All right, still on page 91. Continue to speak of alcoholism as an illness, a fatal malady. Talk about the conditions of body and mind which accompany it. Keep his attention focused mainly on your personal experience. Explain that many are doomed who never realize their predicament. Doctors are rightly loath to tell alcoholic patients the whole story unless it will serve some good purpose. But you may talk to him about the hopelessness of alcoholism because you offer a solution. You will soon have your friend admitting he has many, if not all, of the traits of the alcoholic. If his own doctor is willing to tell him that he is alcoholic, so much the better. Even though your protege may not have entirely admitted his condition, he has become very curious to know how you got well. Let him ask you that question, if he will. Tell him exactly what happened to you. Stress the spiritual feature freely. If the man be agnostic or atheist, make it emphatic that he does not have to agree with your conception of God. He can choose any conception he likes, provided it makes sense to him. The main thing is that he be willing to believe in a power greater than himself, and that he live by spiritual principles. When dealing with such a person, you had better use everyday language to describe spiritual principles. There is no use arousing any prejudice he may have against certain theological terms and conceptions about which he may already be confused. Don't raise such issues, no matter what your own convictions are.
All right. Continue to speak of alcoholism as an illness, a fatal malady. I don't know, man. Don't say disease here. And it didn't say it back in the book when we read it before. It says illness again. And people are always like, why do you get so hung up on that? I don't know, because this book said it was going to give me precise directions on how to save my life. So I don't know. Little things, yeah, they might be little, but I don't know. My life was a freaking dumpster fire, and this book saved it. So I'm gonna dive into the little things. And the reason is that, like, self-responsibility was a big thing for me. And when I go around marching around, I'm like, oh, I got the disease of alcoholism. Really? Really? That takes away a lot of self-responsibility. It takes a lot off of me, a lot of weight that needs to be on top of me. Because, like, my drinking was my fault. The things I did while I was drinking were my fault. The way I treated people were my fault. And that's why I love how the Big Book just keeps enforcing that, that it's an illness, because there's people, you know, it even talks about it, the people that have cancer. You know, what happens if I'm working with a new person and I'm like, keep saying disease, and they're like, dude, it's funny because my mom's on chemo right now, she has cancer. And I look at that more like a disease. You know, oh, you got a good point there, buddy. You got a good point. You know, and then talk about the conditions of the body and the mind. And like I said, those are the selling points. The mind was the selling point to me. The body thing, I don't know. I know anything's incomplete unless I talk about it. But like when I came here, I had a full understanding that when I drank a little more than I intended to, and bad things happened. I didn't need you to break that down to me and show me the chemistry on that. I have a quarter of my life at that time being locked up in prison and jail to show me that. Like, I understood that. But that mind thing, that's where you got me. And then, you know, it says, don't tell them your whole story. And there's a lot of times when I work with guys, I don't. I give them snippets. Like, I give them whatever we're talking about, but I don't sit down and be like, well, let me tell you about my story. I mean, you want to come to a speaker meeting with me? You can hear it. But I personally am tired of telling my story after these years. You will soon have a friend admitting he has many, if not all, the traits of alcoholic. And yeah, and once again, the book will drive you wherever you need to be driven. Like, it does such a better job than I can do on my own. And then it talks about protege. I mean, I went through that stage where I'm like, the Big Book don't talk about sponsorship. But then they use that word protege. They sort of got me on that one. if you all know what that means, look it up. And then it says, you know, tell them exactly what happened to you. And I do talk about that. I do talk about the day in front of the Coast Guard Exchange where I was pacing back and forth like a lion in a cage, and the conversation I had with someone that knew about this book. And then it says the main thing is, in italics, that he is willing to believe in a power greater than himself and that he lived by spiritual principles. People get hung up on that. I know it sounds crazy. I say it all the time. Like, when I got here, I wasn't debating deities, but people have a hard time with that. And the thing is this book tells me, like, in the beginning, you don't have to believe in anything. I always stress that to people. Don't believe nothing. Don't believe in anything. Just turn pages with me. It tells me the main purpose of this book is so you can find a power that will solve all your problems. Not that I can, like, say, well, you know, you can use my God. I'll lend them to you for a little while. Or, you know, the group of drunks. No, you don't got to believe any of that. Let's just meet up and turn some pages. And, I mean, this book does a better job than I think anyone in this room can do. You know, when it's pointed out, and David always says it all the time, like, maybe. When you get to that point in the book, after you've read those four chapters, and you realize that you are doomed if you are a real alcoholic, maybe is not a hard hurdle to get over. It really isn't. Like, yo, you're going to just drink yourself into a one-bedroom apartment with mangy cats and natty ice. Or you could say maybe. Like, really? That's a hurdle? I don't know. The book does a way better job than I can do it. And when dealing with such a person, you'd better use everyday language to describe spiritual principles. It talks about that a couple times in the book. And I'm going to go on this real quick and then I'll stop. But, like, when I first came to AA, I had a very, very vulgar mouth. Like, some of the things that would come out of my mouth would just be for shock and awe, and it was horrible. And people would tell me, like, you shouldn't swear in meetings, you know, you shouldn't swear in meetings. And I'd be like, I'm supposed to speak the language of the drunk, dude. You've been sober so long, you forgot what that language is. Beep, beep, beep. But, you know, and that's how it was. And what happened was, I don't know, I grew out of it. And it's funny, like, people are always telling me, like, oh, like, I have a ton of character defects. And, like, I should be, like, working on these things. And I should, but if I could fix them, there's probably a good chance I could fix my alcoholism. But I can't. So it tells me in this book, it talks about outgrowing. And I truly believe that. That, like, over what happened to me with swearing, all of a sudden I started to realize the company I'm in. If I'm in a meeting with all older people, I don't need to be throwing F-bombs. If I'm gonna meet with a couple younger people, though, I'm gonna throw a couple F-bombs, dude. Because, hey, man, shock and awe, and I'm trying to give them a message that they understand. And, you know, that's what I get out of here, is, like, how do I carry this message? Like, I don't know, stick to the book and talk in everyday language, and before you know it, you get someone reading this book, and they'll find that power that will solve their problem. Thank you.
Thanks for sharing. So I personally think that the spiritual angle of this program is the most important part of the program. And so I agree with this, where it says, tell them exactly what happened to you and stress the spiritual feature freely. I think it can be a touchy subject. And not everybody wants to talk about God right away, for sure. And so I ask for guidance. I ask my higher power for guidance. How do I approach this? And my story is that when I came into program, I believe that there was a higher power, but I didn't think that I deserved any grace from that higher power. And I think that's a pretty simple premise for newcomers to grasp, you know? So I just share, again, my own experience. And I do try to stress that it's not any one God that they have to believe in. And you know what helps me in that respect is listening, really listening to people share at meetings, especially people who are atheist and agnostic, and to get a better appreciation of all the higher power concepts that I can. I grew up Catholic, so I had this pretty narrow concept of a higher power, and coming into program has really broadened my mind, and rightfully so. And so I try to tell people, you don't just leave the door of your heart open a crack, just a little bit, and your higher power will barge in. Even if you think that, that you have qualms about it in the beginning, if you just leave the door of willingness open just a little bit, your higher power will barge in. And I also agree with this everyday language. Understand what Patrick's saying about profanity and trying to reach younger persons versus older persons. I'm sitting here with my gray hair going, oh, would you curse around me? And especially with this book, this book can be difficult. This is not everyday language, and it was not written in everyday language for 2019, for sure. So helping people and bringing people, or bringing this book up to date to the people that you're helping, I think is one of the main reasons why we have a sponsor to guide us through the book. And I think that's about it for that. Thanks so much.
I'm going to go ahead and read the last two readings. The first is on page 94. Outline the program of action, explaining how you made a self-appraisal, how you straightened out your past, and why you are now endeavoring to be helpful to him. It is important for him to realize that your attempt to pass this on to him plays a vital part in your own recovery. Actually, he may be helping you more than you are helping him. Make it plain he is under no obligation to you, that you hope only that he will try to help other alcoholics when he escapes his own difficulties. Suggest how important it is that he place the welfare of other people ahead of his own. Make it clear that he is not under pressure, that he needn't see you again if he doesn't want to. You should not be offended if he wants to call it off, for he has helped you more than you have helped him. If your talk has been sane, quiet, and full of human understanding, you have perhaps made a friend. Maybe you have disturbed him about the question of alcoholism. This is all to the good. The more hopeless he feels, the better. He will be more likely to follow your suggestions. And the last reading is on page 96. Do not be discouraged if your prospect does not respond at once. Search out another alcoholic and try again. You are sure to find someone desperate enough to accept with eagerness what you offer. We find it a waste of time to keep chasing a man who cannot or will not work with you. If you leave such a person alone, he may soon become convinced that he cannot recover by himself. To spend too much time on any one situation is to deny some other alcoholic an opportunity to live and be happy. One of our fellowship failed entirely with his first half dozen prospects. He often says that if he had continued to work on them, he might have deprived many others who have since recovered of their chance.
All right. Where do I go first? All right. I don't know, man. Like, where it talks about he helped you more than you've helped him. God, how true is that? Look, I'm a selfish person. I am driven by self. And I've done some things in the last years that have been so uncharacteristic of me. And it's not because I'm a good person. It's because I follow this book and I don't want to drink again. I mean, I used to ride a scooter. Most of the people know in this room, there was years of Patrick on a scooter. And, like, I remember I'd get up in the morning and I'd go and I'd drive down to the Virginia Beach Jail to meet with this kid. Also, he ain't around here. He's in Massachusetts. His name was Billy. And me and Billy, we would go through, we'd read the book through the little TV monitor. And, like, I've gone to that jail so many times, and I'm always like, dude, it's freaking 8 in the morning. I have better things to do. But I just do it. And, like, it makes me a better person. Like, I actually show up today. I don't want to be late when I speak. I want it when someone asks me to do something, I do it, you know? I found out that that's the most spiritual I can be in Alcoholics Anonymous, is doing what I say I'm going to do when I say I'm going to do it. I show up for people. It talks in here about, you know, maybe you've made a friend. How many times do I hear people like, oh, your sponsor shouldn't be your friend? You kidding me, dude? Why would I want to use someone that's not my friend? Like, why? What? Oh, so he can dictate some craziness to me? That ain't happening. I'm not your guy. There's some other people in here that might fall for that shit, but this ain't the guy, dude. Ain't no one dictating nothing to me. I am a hard-headed cat right here. But that's what's happened with all my sponsors. And the guys that I sponsor, I'm not going to say they all became my friends. Some of them I didn't really care for, but I still read the book with them. But a lot of them are my friends, are still my friends. And it hurts to see them when they're gone, when they disappear for 6 months. They always do. And then, you know, you wonder, but I ain't going to chase you. Whatever. You know where I am. You know my number. You'll call eventually. And under the lash of alcoholism, you will ring my phone. But that's the thing. Like, who are you going to call? You going to go to a meeting and listen to people that are talking other stuff? Or are you going to call me, that guy that was always there? That guy that would always, you know, pick up the phone, that would always read this book over and over and over again with you? You know, and that's something that, like, that's not me. That is not me. That is totally God. I still shock myself all the time. I'm like, that resembles a halfway decent human being, what I just did there. That's pretty impressive. Because I'm not, dude. I'm not. I'm a drunk. A self-centered drunk, dude. And I don't know. Maybe some people in the room think I should be further than I am. I don't really care. I know one thing. I ain't been in prison for a while. So that's good. Yo, sometimes good enough is good enough. Trust me on that. If you've ever been to prison, you know what I'm talking about. But, you know, I don't know. This is magical stuff, dude. And all I have to do is turn these pages. You know, on 96. Do not be discouraged. Oh, my God. If I got discouraged at all the prospects that only made it to how it works, my whole life would be discouraging. I understand. Back to that sentence. I understand. I get it. We know how you feel. We do. I get it, dude. If there's still other options, I understand you're going to try other options. You know, why would you do this? Why would you want to jump on a scooter and go read the big book through a little telecom system at the North Virginia Beach Jail? Who wants to do that? I get it, until there's no other options. Then all of a sudden, this sounds magical. You know, I hear it all the time in AA. People are always, me and my sponsor were talking about this in the car the other night, and people like make me feel bad because I'm a one white chip wonder. Like, they really do. They're like, oh, like, I ain't no one white chip wonder. I hear that all the time, and I'm like, shit, I am. Why? I did what you asked of me. I did the book. I'm sorry. I didn't need to. I don't know. What do you want from me? I did this to the best of my ability. I'm sorry it worked. It can work for you. You do not have to keep relapsing. This program is not about relapsing. It's about recovering. It's about recovering and helping other people on a daily basis. You can have it. Anyone in this room can. Or you can just, you know, I don't know, sit down and write gratitude lists until you got a drink again. Or you could just follow these basic instructions in this book. Precisely. We don't have to guess anymore. We don't have to go about this in a roundabout way. We don't have to sit down and write all the bad things we did when we were drinking. We know you know them. You don't got to write them down for me. You just got to meet with me and turn some pages. Follow some directions and your life will change. You're not going to become perfect, but you will be a lot more useful than you've ever been. I'm a lot more useful than I've ever been to anyone ever. So thank you.
Thanks, Patrick. Patrick and I are the yin and the yang of recovery here.
Who's the yin?
But, you know, what I'm thinking of as we're reading this is the line in the big book that says, our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and those around us. And then I think about this sentence that says, we find it a waste of time to keep chasing a man who cannot or will not work with you. And so that is how I fit myself to be of maximum service, is to be able to let go of somebody who doesn't want to work this program. I think there have been maybe twice as many people who have not kept coming back as there have been people that have kept coming back. And I think that's just the nature of the beast, the nature of the alcoholic mind. But it doesn't do me any good, and it certainly doesn't do those people any good if I chase them around and try to make them see things the way that I see them. You know, possibly they need to go do some more research, and I would be enabling them enabling them and keeping them from reaching the bottom that they have to reach to stick with it. So that's what I get out of this last part. And, you know, I don't know about any of you, but I know that I sponsor for my own good. And I want to help other alcoholics, but what usually happens more than that is that I end up saying things to people that I sponsor that I needed to hear myself. And I end up being a channel of something. Hopefully it's a channel of my higher powers, peace to those people. And that's the beauty of sponsoring for me. That's the beauty of working with others, is to just open myself up to be of use to somebody else. And that is far from what I was like when I came into these rooms. I would tell you what I thought you needed to do, but I was not a channel of anybody's peace to you. So thanks for letting me share.
All right, we're going to pass the baskets in accordance with the seventh tradition. The seventh tradition states, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district, area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Although the amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world, we may want to remember that a dollar does not support as many services as it used to. Announcements. Are there any AA-related announcements? Grant.
I'm Grant. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Grant.
This home group took actions. We do a little thing called Sometimes Speaker about quarterly, and that's coming up soon on February the 18th, which is a couple Mondays from now. At 6 o'clock, we'll be here in the meeting to have some fellowship and some food, and it's potluck style, so if you can bring a dish, please do. If not, just join us. And at 7 o'clock, we'll have a speaker, Dean K, comes from Richmond, Virginia, bringing some experience drinking some folks. So hopefully, if nothing to do that Monday night, or at least nothing more important to do that Monday night, you might come out and join us. If you have any questions, see me after the meeting, but we probably didn't inquire.
Thanks,
Mark.
Appreciate
it. Anybody else? Okay, Simple Actions is a home group. If you are interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands. Newcomers, is there anyone here in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you.
My name is Stephanie, I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Stephanie.
Hey, Stephanie, welcome.
Andrew, I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Andrew.
Hey, Andrew. Welcome.
Literature is available over there. Please see me or any home group member after the meeting if you would like to purchase a book. Sponsorship. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I will be available at this table after we close the meeting. Please feel free to come talk to me. Reminders. Smokers, please use the butt can provided outside. Stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. In closing, can we please thank Heidi and Patrick again? Thanks to all who participated. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight at the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at Plaza del Sol. It is on 22nd and Colonial. Will somebody volunteer to read the last Jimmy?
Hey, Jimmy.
All right, we have a nice way of closing.
Our Father,
who art in
come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us.